Scene 17, Thomas Valier, 6:40 p.m. I suspect that there is scarcely an hour of the day, on any day of the week, that somewhere a party isn't being given, complete with bartender, free drinks, and lavish buffet. And with enough guests imperfectly known to those in charge, it becomes possible for anyone to enter, provided only that he maintain an air of cheerful self-possession, and wave now and then to people at the other end of the room. I am sure there are some people who manage to provide themselves with much of their food supply for the year by attending such parties, but of course at a price. There is the noise, and the stale tobacco smoke, and the crowds, and the gradual accumulation of drunkenness, and the indifferent food, and having to watch ad nauseam people striving to maintain an image, make a contact or an impression, broach business, or stab an enemy. Generally, the price is too high for me, but I notice that when I do attend such a party, I become as bad as the rest. For all I know, every single person at any such party is convinced that he or she alone is a real, decent human being, and that everyone else is to be condemned as a phony or worse. I didn't have an invitation, but I had my ABA badge, and if questioned, I could prove my status as a writer, if not as a bookseller. However, I wasn't questioned, and I don't think the fact that I wasn't actually wearing my badge bothered anyone. Presumably, the publishing firm of Sewell, Broom & Company was investing its money in the hope of obtaining goodwill among the booksellers, and any touch of nastiness in keeping out anybody, even if justified, would introduce an unpleasantness that would turn them all off. Better some wastage on party crashers than a negation of the entire purpose of the evening. The drinks were, of course, of no interest to me, and I passed them by except for a quick study to see if Henrietta was in view. She wasn't. I had a horrible notion that if I did see her, I wouldn't recognize her, for I couldn't seem to bring her face before my mind's eye. If I could hear her speak, though, I would have no trouble. My memory for hearing is much better than for seeing. I moved over to the buffet, which consisted largely of a mountain of fried chicken, and was overcome by a feeling of déjà vu of having done all that before. Except that it wasn't the illusion one usually describes by that French expression, but the real thing. I had done all that before. The night before, I had stepped through a room with a bar, stopping only to look for someone, and then passing on to the buffet. Last night it had been Giles I had been looking for. This night it was Henrietta. And as I hadn't seen him last night, I didn't see her this night. I concentrated moodily on the fried chicken. It looked and smelled good, and my appetite was with me in a bound. I may get too upset to eat from time to time, but that state never lasts for long, and I consider this to signify that I am a healthy human being. I helped myself to a leg and a breast, because I hate to have to pick and choose between white meat and dark meat, ladled on two or three sausages and some French fries. That, plus a salad and later on a cup of coffee and a sliver of cake, would represent all my inner man would need. After that, I could devote myself to finding Henrietta, if she was there to be found. In moving about in search of an empty table, I passed the gantlet of a set of senior editors of Sewell Broom, one of whom was a woman who headed a subsidiary house, and whom I had known when that subsidiary house was an independent. I greeted them all with my head full of smiles and my hands full of food, managed to lean forward to kiss my friend without spilling anything, and got into the other room. The kiss meant my credentials for attending the party were full-blown and evident. Not that I had worried about it. Sewell Broom isn't a bad firm. I wouldn't mind working with them, if I could be sure they would let me have my own way. Prism Press, at least, doesn't interfere with me, and that's an advantage that balances out quite a bit of money. I suspect that thought passed through my mind because somewhere out of the corner of my eye I became aware of Tom Valier, my esteemed publisher, and the prince of Prism Press. He saw me, too, more clearly than I saw him, for I had not as much as gotten one somber bite out of the chicken leg, and remembered that I had had one for lunch, too, when he joined me. "Hello, Darius. Terrible thing," and he shook his head solemnly. I knew what he meant, of course. "Yes, terrible thing," I said, and went on eating. He said, "You found the body," I heard. "I was the lucky man," I said. "He fell in the bathtub and killed himself." "That's what it looked like," I said. "Terrible thing," he said. "Terrible." He shook his head, It happens all the time, slipping in the bathtub, I mean. There must be thousands of people every year injured that way. The tub is a deadly weapon. Poor Giles. Terrible thing, I said. Terrible, he said. Not for 1 minute did I think he had come just to tell me what a terrible thing Giles' death was, and his indoctrination of me into the dangers of the bathtub interested me. I said, spying out the competition. I've got good friends at Sewell Broom, he said feebly, still brooding, apparently, over what a terrible thing it was. I finished my chicken leg and had a few French fries before tackling the salad. He said, you know, Darius, it was coming. I said, yes? What we talked about yesterday. About Giles leaving Prism Press? Not leaving. He was talking about leaving. He hadn't left yet. He smiled in a deprecating way. Under the circumstances, I don't think we ought to mention that unnecessarily. The man's dead, you know. Yes, I know. Terrible thing. Tom looked suspicious, but I suppose the point he was making was too important to take off on side issues. I mean, let the dead lie in peace. Why bother with useless scandal? There's no scandal in changing publishers, I said. Maybe publishers thought there was, of course, if they were on the losing end. Yes, but nothing came of it, you see, so why talk of it? Sure, I said. I have no reason to talk about it, Tom. I'll consider it confidential. Thanks, Darius. And as though I had relieved him enough to make it possible for him to think of food, he said, I think I'll get something for myself. He came back a few minutes later with chicken on his own plate, and by then I had had a chance to think a little. We've got to look at the bright side, Tom, I said. His book will do better than ever. It's not every author who dies in the middle of a promotion campaign. Oh, no, he said uneasily. We don't want to capitalize on a thing like this. Why not? What about the signed books you were going to hand out as door prizes? Are they all gone? He frowned and looked shocked, as though deploring my bad taste. Oh, no, I've got them. We can't hand them out now. It wouldn't be a fit thing to do. You're right, I said. If you hang on to them till Evergone is a clear bestseller, you can auction them off. I wouldn't be surprised, considering these are the last autographs anyone will get, if they don't bring a couple of hundred apiece. No, he said, I don't even want to think of anything like that. But he was thinking of it, I knew, and I bet myself 5-2 he would do it eventually. Come on, I said, take advantage of the headlines. It's happened at the ABA convention. It would mean a lot to the booksellers, and they'll push the book. You know, death at the ABA? For a minute I recalled Asimov's cri de coeur of the night before, of his obligation to write a book called Murder at the ABA. I swear to you, I was so desperate to make sense out of the whole thing that I had a passing flash of Asimov having arranged the whole thing in order to have his plot or publicize his book. Footnote 1. Absolutely sick. I told Darius it would be ridiculous to include that bit, but he wants it in because he says it's so. If he wants to be made to look like a ninny, on his head be it. Isaac Asimov. Footnote 2. I don't know why Asimov should think he's above suspicion. The interested reader might be wondering if he were writing this book from a jail cell. Darius just. Footnote 3. Well, even if it spoils the suspense, I am not writing this book from a jail cell. I'm right here in my office. Isaac Asimov. Tom said reluctantly, I suppose sales will improve, but I don't care about that. The corners of my mouth quirked a bit at that thoroughly ridiculous statement that no publisher, certainly not Tom, could possibly have said without instantly making himself a liar. I held steady, though, and said, for that matter, you can jack up the price for movie rights to Evergone, and you can bring out Giles' first novel again at a higher price, and probably sell as many copies as you sold the first time, if not more. The cloud has a silver lining, literally. Oh, well, said Tom, it's not an appropriate subject for discussion. The loss of those books he might have written can't be made up for. And he filled his mouth with chicken. We both ate quietly, and I went for my coffee and cake, being thoughtful enough to bring some for him, too. Those books that Giles might have written wouldn't have been Prism Press books. It was no loss to Tom, he only gained. Could he have done it? There was the anger over Giles leaving the house, and frustration over the financial loss that might represent, and add to that the gains his death would bring, was it guilt that made him urge me to say nothing of his troubles with Giles, to hide the motive? Was it guilt that made him steadfastly refuse to accept the bait of greed I dangled before him, to hide the motive? Was that why he talked so prattlingly of accidental deaths in the bathtub? Was he anxious to make sure that there was no hint of murder in the air? But it was all conjecture. He might really think it was an accident. He might really be embarrassed at seeming to profit out of tragedy. If Eunice were there, and if she read my thoughts, as seemed to be her habit, she could probably tear my conjectures concerning Tom's guilt to shreds and ribbons. Oh, well, I changed the subject. "Have you seen Henrietta, I wonder?" Tom registered polite inquiry. "Henrietta?" "The interview secretary of the ABA, plump girl, longish face." Tom shook his head. "I'm afraid I don't know her. Teresa might. She arranged the autograph session along with the Hercules Books people." "The DeVore autograph session," he explained, and his voice dropped as he said it as though he had just placed a phantom hat over his heart. "I suppose Teresa would have had to have some contact with the interview secretary." "Sounds reasonable. Where's Teresa?" "She went home. She developed a sick headache after hearing about Giles." Well, if Tom was a Macbeth, Teresa was no Lady Macbeth. That is, provided she really did go home with a sick headache. God, I was beginning to suspect everything. "I won't be coming in tomorrow myself," Tom said. "I'll let the girls run the booth. This thing with Giles has spoiled the convention for me." "Terrible thing," I agreed, and eventually he got up and left. Eventually, I got up, too, to find Henrietta if she was there.